Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In section 7 of the introduction to his work, Being and Time, Martin Heidegger is going to introduce us to the concept, not just the vague general idea, but the concept of phenomenology as he is interpreting it. And in the process of doing so, he's going to clarify for us what is meant by phenomenon. And it'll be very helpful if you don't automatically try to associate Heidegger with other versions of phenomenology that you may have encountered, or with a sort of naive understanding of phenomenon that doesn't actually fit into his typology, but which we should talk about, and we will a little bit later on. Heidegger is interested in clarifying for us, what is phenomenon? What are phenomena? What is the object of this discipline that he is going to be engaging in, or rather inquiry? And he goes back to the Greeks saying phenomenon or phainomenon is coming from this verb phainestai, which is in the middle voice. If you don't understand what that means, it's neither active nor passive, but in a certain sense both, and concerned with itself in this case. It's not something that we use in English, but it is recognized in other Indo-European languages. Phainestai as a verb means something like to show oneself or to show itself, to reveal, to manifest itself. And so as he tells us, the phenomena are the things that actually show themselves to us. He also, you know, engages in a little bit more etymology that we can skip over. So he tells us that the meaning of the expression phenomenon is established as what shows itself in itself. What shows itself, that's a key part, but in itself, not just in the other ways that we're going to talk about here, but as what it is, how it is. It reveals itself in its core to us, or to other things as well. So he goes on and he says, these phenomena are thus the totality of what lies in the light of day or can be brought to light. Sometimes, as he points it out, the Greeks just identified this with beings, ta onta, the things that are in existence, that have being, right? And beings, he said, can show themselves from themselves in various ways. There's not one single modality by which all beings show themselves to us, but they do all have this property or activity or relation to us of displaying, phainestai, showing themselves in themselves. He goes on and he brings up a second important modality that we might take as being connected with the notion of phenomenon, right? He says, the possibility even exists that they can show themselves as they are not in themselves. So things can not only show themselves the way they are, but they can also show themselves to us in ways that they aren't. And he calls this, in German, scheinen. We translate this as seeming or semblance. And he wants to say, listen, this is actually founded or established, the possibility for this is established on this more primordial self-showing. The very fact that something can show itself to us in a way that we might consider to be somewhat deceptive or concealing or, you know, leaving something out or presenting itself in a way that it's not, means that we actually do have some degree of access to how things in fact, are. So he says, what's an example of this? Phenomenon agathon in Greek means a good that looks like, but in reality is not what itself what it gives itself out to be. What would be an example of this? Well, in ancient Greek philosophy, pleasure is often a phenomenon agathon, right? So is wealth, the apparent good. It's not truly good. I mean, it could be good for something. That's the useful good, right? But it's easy to mix it up because pleasure imposes itself on us and, you know, seduces us, cajoles us, and then after it's whirled us around, leaves us feeling kind of empty as a result. So what seems? Semblance. He goes on and he says, you know, these are both connected with each other. The original meaning, phenomenon, what is manifest, already contains and is the basis of the second meaning, phenomenon, semblance. So he says, we attribute to the term phenomenon the positive and original meaning of phenomenon terminologically and separate the phenomenon of semblance from it as a privative modification. What does that mean? So that's a little bit of technical language that we use in philosophy, particularly in metaphysics, for those who have a basis in it, in its history. A privation is where there is a lack of what ordinarily or ought to be there. So blindness is a privation of sight. It's not merely a opposite of it. It's a definite lack. Now, Heidegger is going to go further here. He's going to introduce two more categories, you could say. And now he's going to talk about appearance. Instead of it being seeming, scheinen, it's going to be appearance, erscheinen. He's making a distinction there. And he says that phenomenon is often used of appearances as well. He says, what both of these original terms express has at first nothing to do with what's called appearance or even mere appearance, which have a big role in philosophy. So he says, one speaks of, for example, and he's using a case here, the appearances or symptoms of an illness, of a Krankheit, right? A illness within the body or the mind. And he says, what is meant by this are occurrences within the body that show themselves. So they are presenting themselves to us, but how are they presenting themselves? They are presenting themselves as of something else, something that, as Heidegger is going to point out, they indicate something that does not show itself. So, for example, certain bodily symptoms signify or indicate, they are the appearances of a fever. Can you actually see the fever? You could say, well, I can feel the fever when I have it. Yes, that's quite true. But Heidegger is talking about you seeing or perceiving or in some way grasping the fever of the other person. And he says appearances, what lies behind the appearances in these cases doesn't actually show itself in these ways. So he goes on and he says, when such occurrences emerge, their self-showing coincides with the objective presence vorhanden sein, being out there for us, you know, of disturbances that don't show themselves. Appearance as the appearance of something, he says, thus precisely does not mean that something shows itself. It means something makes itself known which does not show itself. So that's a very important distinction there. Something makes itself known which does not show itself to us, the ones who are, you know, grasping it. Now, of course, the thing that's functioning as the appearance does show itself to us. So if we're talking about the flush or the hotness, the clamminess, those are things that show themselves. What this means for Heidegger is that appearance remains founded upon the more primordial conception of phenomenon, right? So he goes on and he says, what does not show itself in the manner of what appears can also never seem. So it's neither of these, the thing that's lurking behind there, He says, all indications, presentations, symptoms, and symbols have this fundamental formal structure of appearing, though they differ among themselves. There is a heterogeneity to them. So he says, appearing is only possible on the basis of a self-showing of something. The thing that's appearing, that's indicating, has to be self-showing. But it's, you might say, gesturing towards something more important, something that is supposed to be lying behind it, revealed through it, but isn't revealed through it. So he says, the concept of phenomenon is not going to be delimited by this, but rather presupposed. Now, why does he say that? Because many people in the history of Western metaphysics end up taking appearance, or even what we're going to talk about is mere appearance, as if those are the paradigm for phenomena. And this is going to be a fundamental problem in Heidegger's view. He says appearance, in the way that we normally use it, so here we have to take a little pause from our categories here, can have a double meaning. Appearing in the sense of making itself known as something that does not show itself, so this technical meaning of appearance as he's using it. Second, in the sense of what does the making itself known, the thing that's doing the appearancing, we could say. He says, finally, one can use appearing as the term for the genuine meaning of phenomenon as self-showing. And if we mix these three up, he says, we're going to wind up in all sorts of confusions. So we need to keep these distinct in our analysis from each other. Now let's talk about mere appearance. He says, appearance can take on yet another fourth category within the schema, a second meaning of its own. He says, if one understands what does the making itself known, what is supposed to be behind the appearance, right? What in its self-showing indicates the non-manifest as what comes to the fore in the non-manifest itself and radiates from it in such a way that what is non-manifest is thought of as what is essentially never manifest. So this is a very complicated way of talking here, right? What does he have in mind? Something like the Kantian thing in itself, the noumenon, right? Behind the phenomenon. He says, if this is so, then appearance is tantamount to production, Hervorbringung in German. And he says, or to what is produced, Hervorgebrachtes. These are correlative terms, right? Hervorbringen, what is being brought out in front of us. So let's think about how this would make sense and what he has in mind here. When we talk about things that we're encountering here in the phenomenal world, the world of appearances, the way that we ordinarily talk about this, as being produced by things that we never really could see, sense, perhaps not even truly understand, then we have this mere appearances notion at play. This is very strong in Kantian philosophy, but it comes out of the ways in which both rationalist and empiricist philosophy in the time before Kant were understanding the relation of the knowing and acting subject in relation to the world that they were involved in and encountering. So he goes on and he says, what does the making itself known and is brought forward shows itself in such a way that as the emanation of what it makes known, it precisely and continually veils what it is in itself. But then again, this not showing which veils is not semblance. Kant, he says, uses the term appearance in this twofold way. On the one hand, appearances are the objects of empirical intuition, what's appearing to us, right? On the other, he says, appearance as the emanation of something that makes itself known but conceals itself in its appearance. So now we have four different categories of things that fall under the phenomena. All of these three are, in fact, ultimately based in one way or another upon the more primordial conception of that which is actually showing itself in itself. But this, unfortunately, gets lost, and as time goes on, we tend more and more towards thinking in these terms, and thereby misunderstand what phenomene or phenomena is supposed to be. So he goes on, and he tells us a few other things in this section. He says, if in the way we grasp the concept of phenomenon, we leave undetermined which beings are to be addressed as phenomena, and we leave altogether open whether the self-showing is a particular being or a characteristic of the being of beings, then we're dealing solely with the formal concept of the phenomenon. If we're thinking in very generic terms, you might say, although generic is actually the wrong way to say it, because being is not a genus, right? He says, what already shows itself in appearances prior to and always accompanying what we commonly understand as phenomena can be brought thematically to self-showing. And this is indeed what phenomenology in Heidegger's sense is supposed to do. It's not only supposed to show us individual things or their relations, but it's supposed to show us what goes ontologically beyond that. So he mentions, for example, space and time, which are two of the key aspects of this work, being and time, spatiality, temporality. These can be brought to the level of phenomenon, not in the sense of any of these, but as what shows itself in itself. So hopefully this clarifies what it is that Heidegger has in mind as phenomenon. I mentioned that we do also need to think about something that he doesn't address in this book, because we use this word phenomenon in a very offhand way in our own time. You know, if we talk about a person is a phenomenon or something is an internet phenomenon, what are we talking about in here? Does that fit into these categories or types of things that might be called phenomena? Or do we have something even more vague in mind, like what we ought to be paying attention to, what has importance, what draws our attention? What we have to ask when somebody is using the word phenomenon is there something being revealed or indicated or shown or signified? So if somebody is an internet phenomenon, We should ask ourselves, what does that actually mean? What are they signifying? What does the person using that term mean to tell us or to show to us in so speaking? And I leave that up to you to think about where that might fit in here, if indeed it does. Heidegger, just to stress this, is primarily concerned with this first, more primordial way of understanding phenomenon and the seeming that arises out of it privatively, but sort of, so to speak, at just one distance of remove. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.